Welcome to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exists to help people find their way back to God. This week is another week in our series called All Things New, in which we take a look at the renewal of dead things. And so, here's Pastor Tim to bring us this week's message.
All right, if you have a Bible, we're going to be in Ezekiel, Old Testament book of Ezekiel 47. Ezekiel 47. What I want to do this morning is I want to give you a vision or a picture. It's kind of like maybe think a metaphor even that has helped me understand this cultural moment. So the space that we find ourselves in right now, this ancient picture has actually helped me kind of sift through this. It's given me some language to understand this. And I want to kind of walk you through that as simply as I can and give you some language that I have found helpful, and maybe it'll be helpful for you. So with that said, let's just not waste any time. Let's jump right in. Verse 1 of Ezekiel 47. The man brought me back to the entrance to the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. Let's pause there. Obviously, we're jumping in the middle of something here. So a little bit of context. We're jumping in. The man brought me back to the entrance of the temple. You got to ask the questions, okay, who is this man? Who is the me that is speaking in this passage? Like, who's me? Who's the man? Why is this man dragging me around the temple? Like, what is going on? Let's ask the context questions. And if you ever stuck on, like, what questions should I ask? The basic questions are always some of the best questions. The who, what, where, when, why, and how questions. Always some of the best questions. Let's first ask the question of who. Who is the me that's being dragged around by this man? Any guesses? It's a gimme. Ezekiel, okay. Yeah, Ezekiel. Ezekiel is an Old Testament prophet, and of all the Old Testament prophets, Ezekiel is my personal favorite. Dude, man, is wild. Ezekiel has, like, we could spend the entire morning just listing all the weird, wild moments in Ezekiel's life. The guy himself is wild. Let me give you my top four favorite Ezekiel moments. Some of these, just like, if you haven't read through Ezekiel, these are, like, mind-blowing. Number four, Ezekiel, so my top four in reverse order. Number four, Ezekiel wants to show, just to prove how much he loves the Bible, so he decides not to tweet about it, not to create a TikTok where he's like reading the Bible. No, that's what they do on TikTok. I've seen them. He decides he's going to eat it. That's number four. Number three, Ezekiel wants to warn the people of Jerusalem of their impending doom. If they don't change, if they keep doing what they're doing, it's going to end badly. So the way he decides, I'm going to warn people. You've got that friend Carol who just has to speak her truth. Okay, this is how he speaks his truth. He decides he is going to walk into the middle of the city and lay down in the city on his left side for 390 days. Then after 390 days, he gets up, turns over, and lays on the other side for 40 days. All symbolic, all trying to catch their attention. Passionate guy. That's number three. Number two, this one, you won't believe me unless you just look it up. These stories are all Ezekiel 3, 4, and 5. You can read them in your Bible. Number two, Ezekiel gets in an argument with God. Here's the basis of the argument. God, I don't want to cook my food, my bread, over human dung. It's not sanitary, God. I know you want me to cook it over human dung. I'm not going to do it. It's not sanitary. I would rather cook my food over cow dung. You can find articles online. They're literally like armchair psychologists trying to figure out, is Ezekiel okay? Like, is he okay? Is he? Someone make the argument like he's like schizophrenic or paranoid. Like, I mean, some of the things he does are so radical. He's so desperate to alert people of what's going to happen that some of the stuff he does is like, okay, it's a bit out there. Number one, my favorite moment in the life of Ezekiel. Ezekiel, again, he's going to warn Jerusalem of their impending doom. So he decides to shave off his COVID beard. His COVID beard was from laying on the side and then flipping. Like, so he's got a COVID beard. He decides to shave off his COVID beard with a sword. Then he takes the hair of his, can you imagine shaving with a sword? That's manly. Try that. He shaves his beard with a sword. Then he takes his hair, and a third of his hair he burns. Have you ever smelled burning hair? No, it doesn't smell good. He burns a third of his hair. Another third of his hair he weaves into his clothes, and he wears them. And then, then a third of his hair he decides to bring into the city and throw it in the air. But not just throw it in the air. He decides then to throw it in the air and then take his sword and slash at the hair that he's throwing in the air. I like Ezekiel. Ezekiel's like that crazy uncle that like always has the best stories, and he's always going to make for an interesting time at a party, but you're not sure if you should invite him to your daughter's birthday party. You know, like he's that, like he's just a bit unhinged. That's the who. Brings me to the what. What is this Ezekiel 47? This is like an exercise move. I'm catching my breath. Ezekiel 47. So this whole a man led me through the temple, that whole bit is a vision. It's actually part of a longer extended vision that begins seven chapters earlier in Ezekiel 40. It is a vision of a man or an angel or God himself. We're not quite sure from the story. Some people actually have made the argument that it is like Christ in some way has come into the story. So we're not quite sure. He's just referred to as a man, but you get a sense it's more than a man. It's an angel or God. And somehow this man gives him a vision of the future. So think like Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. Remember that movie? Giving him a vision of the future. Or Matthew McConaughey's Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. No, just me that wasted money on that thing. So get your money back. So this angel's bringing Ezekiel around and showing him a vision of the future. Now, the third question is when? When does this happen? The reason Ezekiel has been acting, let's say passionately, well, that's maybe the right word, is because there is a nation to the northeast, a nation known as Babylon. They're an empire. And Babylon has, they've been conquering the world, and it looks as though Israel is next. And so the first half of Ezekiel is warning the people, if you do not put your trust in God, if you do not change, if you think you can fight these guys on your own strength and your own intellect, you're gonna go down. So the first half is Ezekiel warning them. Then it happens. Babylon invades. They destroy Jerusalem. They destroy the temple where people met with God. So this whole moment happens. And the second half of Ezekiel is after the Israelites have been conquered and many of them have been brought into exile, taken away from their homes into the foreign nation of Babylon. The second half is Ezekiel saying, okay, don't lose hope. Don't lose hope. This particular prophecy is written about 5 years after the Babylonians have invaded. So when things are at their lowest, their most hopeless, he writes this letter, which brings us to why. Why this? And this is what I want to camp out in this morning. Why Ezekiel 47? What's the point of all this? I think that the answer to the why does this matter question has as much to do with you and I as it does with them then. So you and I now as it did them then. Ezekiel is given a vision for his world in the space that they found themselves in that I would say has helped me get language and helped me understand a bit of what's going on in our world. In his world, his people were in exile. They were essentially homeless. And as I've been thinking about, like, what's the language I find myself using again and again to describe how I feel in this season? The language I find myself using is a bit of exile language. I have felt a bit homeless of sorts, not like physically homeless, but I felt a bit homeless. Anybody else? The language, so especially around like politics and religion, those two things, big things. I felt politically homeless and religiously homeless. There was a day. Right, I felt like I knew my tribe, right? I felt like, okay, this is my tribe, politically. I felt like, okay, this is my tribe. I kind of agree with most of the positions. It's not a perfect tribe. No tribe is. We're not perfect, but I kind of feel like we're wrestling and we're using the same language. But then over the last few years now, several years, I have felt more and more like, okay, I feel like we agree on a lot of the same key issues, and yet, wait, what? No, we can't do that. No, why would we do that? No. But then you go to the other side and it's like, okay, now I'm on the other side. Maybe this is my tribe. And it's like, well, these are nice people. We like everyone's nice over here. And then it's like, wait, what? No, that's a horrible idea. That'll never work. We can't do that. So then, okay, maybe I'll go to the middle. Maybe the answer is somewhere in the middle. And then you get to the middle, and the middle feels like a lot of people that are just like, no, please go. Let's just let the season pass. Let's not talk about anything that's hard or relevant at all. And I found myself like, okay, this tribe doesn't quite feel like home, and that tribe doesn't quite feel like home, and this middle tribe doesn't quite, spiritually or politically homeless. Anybody else? Don't want to raise your hand. Maybe you don't feel, and I'm actually grateful if you don't feel politically homeless. I'm grateful if you found a home there, because it's being homeless in those areas feels hard. But when it comes to religion, I think it's even more hard. So I've got like all these beliefs and convictions. You do too. These beliefs and convictions. And for years, I thought, these are the convictions most Christians share. Like, we all kind of share these. We would argue about little things and nuances, but by and large, we share these convictions. And then this last season has happened, and I find like there's one group who's like, okay, we gave it a go, and I guess the Bible isn't all that relevant, church isn't all that relevant, it's going down, it's not going to last, it's like brunch is a great idea, let's just do brunch instead, and whatever, we gave it a shot. And that can't be my tribe. Like, I have great hope for the future of faith in church. I have great hope, so that can't be. I find the Bible more relevant than ever. That can't be it. But then on the other side, you've got like this camp where it's like, okay, they're using all they're quoting the Bible a lot, and they're using all the religious language, and yet the best way I can describe it is it's like this weird conspiracy theory theology. Like, what is this? Like, this doesn't feel like my tribe. And then you get to the middle, especially, and this is like true for like people who work for the church, where our paychecks are dependent on it. And it's just a bunch of people who are like, what are you doing? Don't talk about the issues right now. Like, just put a plastic smile on and just keep going. You got to keep the thing going. Just say the party line. Like, how are you? We're so glad to see you this morning. Just keep going. And I found myself in the season that like, okay, well, that feels wrong too. It's felt like a bit, the best language I can think of is exile or homeless. Anybody else feel a bit like religiously homeless, politically homeless? My guess is a number of you, because you're still here. Not everyone's still here. You're still here. So my guess is there's a number of you who feel a bit of this as well. And if that's you, if it's not you, again, I'm grateful. But if it is you, I want to give you Ezekiel 47. This has been really helpful for me. And I'm going to do my best to keep this one as simple and clear as I can. There's a lot of like really cool contextual stuff in here. These like deep insights that culturally would have been relevant. We'll come, Lord willing, we're going to come back to those in a couple of weeks on August 15 for Baptism Sunday. I want to bring us back to this passage. But for the sake of the conversation this morning, I want to keep things as simple as possible and walk you through what has given me language and given me some pictures for how I feel. Maybe it's helpful to you too. Ezekiel 47, verse 1, start in the beginning. The man, again, is it an angel? Is it God? Is it Jesus? Like, the man brought me back to the entrance to the temple. And I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. And by the way, those are all details that do matter. We're not going to get into them, but they do matter. Essentially, the river is coming out of the southern steps and is going to make its way to the Dead Sea eventually. The water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. He then brought me out through the north gate, and he led me around the outside to the outer gate facing east. And the water was trickling from the south side. Now stop there. Notice the word trickling there. Maybe if you have your Bible, underline or circle the word trickling. The word trickling in Hebrew is the word paka. I don't know. It's spelled paka. It means a slow and subtle trickle. It's like the drip, 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 dripping of a hose. It's the kind of trickle that if it was raining out hard and you saw this kind of trickle in your basement, you probably wouldn't even be that worried about it. It's like, well, that happens when it rains hard. It's a slow drip, drip. It's the kind of trickle that is so slow that you could walk right by it. So not only do we have in this passage that the temple has been rebuilt. So Ezekiel is giving this vision of there's a new temple, but then there is this water, and it starts very slow, and it's trickling. It's living water, they would refer to. Any moving water is living water. So it somehow represents God, but it's small. If you're not paying attention, you could walk right by it. This, by the way, is often how God tries to get our attention in the scriptures or in life, right? Like you've experienced this. God often speaks as Elijah will refer to it as a still small voice of God, almost sheer silence. God often speaks in silence. And you have to slow down. You have to want to hear the voice of God. Have you seen this in your life? We're not great at this. I'm not great at this. We live in a world of loud. I'm trying to pay more attention to how often I have my headphones in my ears, especially around my kids. But I've just noticed that myself. Like, we live in the world of loud, and it was like, okay, music was on a lot. Now it's like podcasts and audiobooks, and there's always things to have in our ears. And we live in a world of loud. And especially when you think of like consumerism, we right now have companies who have billions of dollars that they'll spend, and they spend it because they know they'll get their money back to hijack our amygdala, the fear center of our brain, to get us to buy stuff. Like, they're not shy about being loud. And yet God just doesn't play that game. And what you discover again and again in the scriptures and in life is often life change begins by simply noticing the trickle of water. God is here somewhere. This is different. And then you follow it. Ezekiel's going to follow the trickle of water. By the way, I wonder how many of us right now God is trying to get our attention. Students who are going to Youth Week, there will be moments where it's like you'll be excited because, wow, we're going to go after this thing we're doing here. We're going to go and do color wars, or we're going to go and do a worship service. And I want you just to remember, like, this moment right here, God may be trying to get your attention. Like, this, whatever that moment is, like, somehow God might be in that moment trying to say, hey, I'm right here. You don't have to find me there. You'll find me there too, but I'm here. Ezekiel follows a trickle. Verse 3, as the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits. Then he led me through the water that was ankle deep. So from a trickle to ankle deep. And the distance is 1,000 cubits. A cubit is about 18 inches. So length from your elbow to your middle finger. About 18 inches long. 1,000 cubits is about 1,500 to 1,700 feet. Or as I think of it, a little over five football fields. I like to measure things in football fields. A little over five football fields. This is not a little walk. This is a hike. So the man leads him in, he's got to follow the trickle for a while. And he leads him on a hike. And finally, after five football fields of walking, the water is now up to his ankles. So it's still like, okay, that's refreshing. It's only up to his ankles. If there was if ankle deep water was a spiritual condition, we would refer to this spiritual condition as what? Shallow, right? Ezekiel, God has Ezekiel walk through shallow water. Ezekiel has to go through the shallow, but he was never supposed to stay there. Shallow is a stage of spiritual growth, but it was never intended to be the destination. My three-year-old loves to play in the kiddie pool. So at our gym, we've got a big pool, then we got the little kiddie pool, which has got little, it's basically up to your ankle water, and she'll put her like swimmies on, and she'll splash and she'll laugh, and we laugh with her because honestly, it's relaxing when she's in the kiddie pool. She's three; it's what she's supposed to do. She's supposed to splash around in a kiddie pool, and it's relaxing for us because there's not a lot that can harm her. We can relax a little bit. It's pretty hard to get serious. It's pretty hard to drown in 3 inches of water. Like, it's really hard to. It's pretty safe. It's pretty safe. It's comfortable. I think many in our world, especially in this season, it's like the curtains have been drawn and we realize that there's a lot of people who have settled for spiritual shallowness. Ankle deep water is comfortable. It's easier. Now, to be clear, nobody wants to be a shallow person. Like, nobody chooses to be everybody wants to be deep people. How do you become a person who stays in the shallow? Well, in order to step out of the shell, it requires some risk. And risk requires that you may actually get hurt. I think a lot of times, if I were to take my three-year-old and I were to take off her swimmies and I were to throw her in the deep, she would panic. And she probably, because she can't swim, she probably, if I were to do that, she'd probably be frightened of water for the rest of her life. I think for some people, this last season, they revealed that the shallow is just safe because they've experienced somebody who tried to push them too fast or too hard into some tough conversations, some conversations they weren't ready for, and it's terrified them. I got a lot of grace for that. But the shallow water was always a space to go through, never a space to stay, How do you know if you're here? You avoid talking about anything deep, anything of substance. Now, there's certain people that you just can't have those conversations with. I get that. But if you can't at all, if you're one of those people that nobody can have a conversation, that's a question. Avoiding my real issues because I might get exposed. Again, nobody wants to be a shallow person. It doesn't happen on purpose often. And honestly, quite honestly, it is easier to stay in the ankle deep water because you can justify it as, well, at least my feet are wet. I wonder how many people in our world right now, if you were to poll them, they're convinced that they have been in the game. I'm in the game because my feet are wet. And you know what? I've been a Christian for a long time. I've walked 5 football fields. I've been a Christian for a long time. Look how wet my feet are. And yet they've never actually left the shallow. Here's your hot take for the morning. It's way easier to not do something than it is to do something. Or it's way easier to say, well, I tried it, but it didn't work. It's way easier to try a diet and then stop doing it and say, well, I did the diet, it didn't work, right? Like a number of people, my wife tried the whole 30, she made it a day. And I tell her she should write a book called The Whole Day. So, but it's one thing, it's like, I tried P90X, it didn't work for me. No, did you try it or did you like say you tried it? It's way easier to say you tried something I tried fasting. I went to that Bible study once. Like, it's way easier to not do something than it is to do something. To do something requires a risk of failure. And so it's way easier to say, well, I've kept my feet in the shallow. I for a season, was a college pastor, and I would have these students, and we'd have these appointments, and they'd tell me these stories of how they were trying to find somebody who's deep. And I started to notice a pattern, and I finally said it to one of them, and I still don't know if it was nice, but it was just, they're like, I can't find anyone who's deep. And I finally realized maybe the nicest thing to say is, I don't think you're going to find many deep people in the shallow end. Like, they don't tend to hang out in the shallow end. And it feels like every place you're looking for these deep, quote unquote, deep people is in really shallow spaces. It's one thing for my 3-year-old to splash around in a kiddie pool. It's another for an adult man to wear swimmies splashing around in a kiddie pool. That's weird, right? Like, so at some point, like, if we want to do the work, we've got to do the work. Parents, this is a big one for parents, right? Like, as parents, our job is at some level to protect our kids. Like, that's really important. And at the same time, we can smother our kids and keep them from all and any risk, right? You've experienced this. Like, it's like a fine line. How do we do that? How do we do the work? What I've realized in my own parenting is if I'm not careful, I can so insulate or isolate my kids that they never actually have to deal with hard things. One of the slogans we say a lot to our kids is, I know this is hard, but you can do hard things. You can do hard things. Maybe some of us need to hear that as adults. Like, I know this is hard, but you can do hard things. The man leads Ezekiel to leave the comfort of the shallow. Keep going. Verse 4. He measured off another 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee deep. So another 5 football fields, they keep hiking, and now the water has gone from ankle deep, from a trickle to ankle deep to now knee deep. Now, if there's any stage of spiritual growth that I find myself, and I think most of us would find ourselves getting stuck, it's at the knee deep stage. If the ankle deep stage was the stage of comfort, it's comfortable. The knee-deep stage is what I would call the stage of choices. Because once you're at the knee-deep stage, it's as easy to go forward or to turn around as it is to go forward, right? It's as easy to go back as it is to go forward. I don't know what age this flips, but kids go in water that's way too cold. any other dads want to admit, like this, like when I was a kid, I remember thinking, why does my dad never go in the water? Now I understand why my dad never went in the water. My kids will go in the water. Abram was in the water on Memorial weekend. It was like 45 degrees, way too cold. But kids go in the water, and what I've discovered in myself is there's a moment where I will walk in the water with the intention of I'm going in the water to play with the kids. And I usually get to about here, about knee deep. And then it's, well, this is pretty uncomfortable. This is pretty cold. If I go, I know myself enough now. If I go in, I'm committed. So it's way easier. And I'll often do this game of, I'm going to go in. Give me a few more minutes. Daddy's got to warm up. Then I go out. And then it's like, I feel bad. I should go play. And I know if once I get in, I know once I go under, it'll be fine. I know this. I know I'll be fine. But I'll go in. Then I go out, and then in, then out, start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. I think for many of us in our faith, this is how we fall into these patterns, knowing the thing we're supposed to do. Like, I know I'm supposed to do this. I know this is the best use of this day. And I get halfway there, and it's like, oh, but to do that, it's really uncomfortable. We'll go back. Okay, but I know I should do it. I will go back. The knee-deep stage in many ways is the most important stage because it's where we make choices that are the hard choices. They'll affect everything, but they're the hard choices. In the moment, there's not a lot of fun. To go from knee, we'll see he'll be waist-deep in a moment. That's the hardest stage. Like, to go from knee-deep to waist-deep is the hardest stage. It's not a fun stage. Often, it's the first few choices in someone's life. It's the early stage of I'm going to take my faith more seriously, whatever that looks like, that are the hardest. Talk to anyone who's a recovering addict. It's the first few days that are absolutely the hardest. Talk to anyone who's just walked through a horrible season of grief, and just to lift the pillow off their head off the pillow, the first few days are absolutely the hardest. Knee deep stage is brutal. If knee deep had a slogan, it would be, "I'll start tomorrow. I'll start tomorrow. It's uncomfortable. Just give me a few more minutes, and I'll be right out there." What I think makes it really hard is, there are often two groups of people calling out to you when you're in the knee-deep stage. So when you're in the shallow, everyone's going to walk with you in the shallow. Like, we'll all walk in the water. Like, if spiritual condition was a water level, the ankle deep is like comfortable. It's like walking on the beach. Everyone will put their feet in the water, no matter how cold it is. Like, it's just refreshing. But once you get to the knee-deep stage, you have two groups of people. There are those who are deeper who are going to say to you, come on in, it's fine. Just you'll get used to it. Come on in. Then there's a group on the beach who are going to say, I'm not going in there. Good luck. It's pretty, once you go in, like, it's going to be cold. There's only so many towels. Good luck. And we find ourselves in the middle with one group calling us forward and another group calling us backwards. I think what you find in the knee-deep stage is often you start to notice there's two different kinds of friends. There are some who are cheering you on towards really, really beautiful, good things. And then there are the friends who, for whatever reason, maybe it's just so they feel better about themselves, they don't want to see you succeed. They don't actually want, they'll tell you they do, but they don't actually want to see you healthy. Oh, just one drink, no big deal. Oh, it's just, you can order, no big deal, it'll be fine. It's fine. Oh, blow that church thing off. There's like, look at the weather, let's do some golf. Like, there are friends who will want to hold us back. This is a stage of choices because it's at this stage where a number of people who do take their faith walk seriously will make choices, even choices around who their friends are, that are hard. Students, young people, listen to me here. It's a big deal. You've heard the same thing I've heard, that the you show me the five people you hang out with and I'll show you who you'll become, right? Like that, it's a big deal. Knee deep is a stage of choices. Verse 4. He goes deeper. He measured off another 1,000 and led me through water that was up to the waist. So another 5 football fields. He's walking a ways now. Another 5 football fields. Now we're from knee deep to waist deep. Now you're going to find out why the knee deep choices matter. Because once you get to waist deep water, now you begin to realize any step now and the current might pull me in such a level that I can't control it anymore. Any step now and I might be in over my head. I might lose my footing. I might lose my ability to touch the ground. Knee-deep choices are about, the choices are about direction and movement and what are the activities or the actions that I should be doing? What are the right things to do? Waist-deep water So if that's all keeping us aimed in the right direction, waist-deep water is where you realize, I would call it the waist-deep is all about control. If I keep going, I will lose control. Waist-deep water is when you realize what we want in our lives, what we've been telling God he's got to do for us, maybe is the wrong path. Waist-deep water is when you realize maybe God does want to speak, but he decided, I don't want to speak between 6 a.m. and 6:15 when you told him he has to speak. Maybe he wants to speak beyond that time in a different, he needs you to open, to readjust your life around his timetable. Waist-deep water is when we need a more robust understanding of who God is. We spend a lot of time talking about what kind of God is God, because waist-deep water, if you're going to let go of control, you better trust that the God behind the current is trustworthy. You can say knee-deep and be like, I'm afraid of you, God, so I'll keep doing it. But if you don't trust this God, it's got to be bigger than just fear. If you don't trust this God, you'll never go up to your waist or deeper. Never. Okay, don't hear me wrong in this, but I would say that when your faith is at ankle deep and maybe even knee deep, you don't actually need a faith that's all that strong, because you're not risking much anyway. Hey, don't hear me wrong there. But I don't know that you actually need a faith that's all that strong when you're only up to your knees or your ankles, because you're not really risking. It's not really a risk. The offering basket comes by and I throw a 20 in. That's not really a risk. I got plenty. I'm not going to go bankrupt over that. It's not really a risk. It's getting my feet wet. It's a stage, but it's not really a high risk. I'm not really putting it all out there. Jumping from relationship to relationship isn't really a risk. I'm dating, but it's not really, it's committing to a relationship. That takes some risk. That takes some risk. Staying loyal in a relationship, that takes some risk. Showing up once to a Bible study. Trying fasting once, not really a risk. Sticking to it, this is where you realize whether your faith is real. Because once you get in the current, those of you who have been in rivers, you know once you get into the current's going to take you where the current's going to take you. Once you get into the current, it's really hard to turn around. That's where we're going, by the way. I have time. Here's a story. When I was in that college pastor stage of my life, I worked in Holland, and so my busy season was during, a lot of the students were Hope College students, and so my busy season was during the school year, and then it was a little bit lighter in the summertime. And so I would do some training events for my leaders, but it was just a pretty easy season. And so I decided one year I met with the student director, the youth pastor, and we decided, hey, let's do a coming of age thing for the guys, like high school juniors and seniors. Let's take the guys. I'd been reading all this stuff on initiation rites and realized as Americans, we don't really have one. Those of you who grew up in a different era, there was an initiation rite when you went to war or you signed up for military service. There was a moment where you realized, I am no longer a boy, I am now a man, right? There was a moment. We don't really have those moments. And so I just discovered there was all these guys that didn't really know, they weren't really sure. Am I a boy? Am I a man? What am I? How do I know when I'm a boy, or when I become a man? Is it when I hit puberty? Is it when I drive? Is it when I go to college? Is it when I get married? Is it when I beat James Bond, the game? When do I become a man? How do I know when I become a man? I don't know. So I decided, let's do this thing. We'll take guys on what I called, I dubbed it a man trip. We're going to do man things. We'll eat man food and go, I don't know. I was a young man. I can't tell you what happened on man trip. What happened on man trip stayed on man trip. We made a pact. But we had said, let's go. And we'll have, at some point, we'll talk about what does it mean to be a man. In our world, what does it look like to have responsibility and to take it seriously? And then we had this whole, at the end of it, we'll for those who didn't realize already that they were men, we would tell them something. To have an older man tell a younger man, you are a man, means a great deal. So dads, if you haven't done this to your teenage son, it may be time. For an older man to say, you're a man, is a big deal. Anyway, so one of the things, can't tell a lot about the trip, but one of the things we were going to do, we did, was I decided let's get some old kayaks and I found a place to rent kayaks. We had about 25 to 30 guys, including me, the student director, and another adult supervisor. So the three of us, and then there was about 25 to 30 seniors, juniors in high school. We rented these kayaks, and we're going to go down the Pine River. Anybody kayak down the Pine River? A number of you. Okay, so you may know the exact location. Okay, so you know the location this happened. I decided, okay, let's go. Stop me if I've told this story. I don't think I have. Let's kayak down the Pine River. And it's me and the student director in the front, and the other adult was in the back, and then the 30 guys spread out between us. We're having a good old day. The rapids are moving pretty fast, and it's not terrifying, but it's got a little bit of adventure in it. And then we turn a corner. And as I turn this corner, picture the Pine River, there's a large dune off to the side with, like, dune sand. I'm turning the corner, and I should have Googled this. I don't even know if Google was a thing at that time. But my student director looks, and he goes, and I'm like, what? And I turn, because I'm looking around. I'm looking at the water, and I turn, and I look up, and in the dunes, there are anywhere from 40 to 50 in their men and women in their 20s and 30s, and they're completely naked. And they're standing on top of the dune, and I have a sense of what they're going to do. They're going to run down the dune, and if I'm timing it right, there should be lots of flapping skin, and then they should be right at the base of the river as a bunch of some of them prepubescent boys are coming around the turn, and I'm thinking, oh no, oh no, oh no, what would you do? If this was you, I realize there's nothing we can do other than, okay, please, like, look at over here, guys, everyone over here. And so we just hear a bunch of laughing behind us, and yada, yada, yada. That was our trip. We turned some boys into men that weekend. We just didn't, not the way we anticipated. Where the current goes, the current's going to take you. The current's going to, like, you're going to go with, there's not much you can do. Once you get too deep into the river, the current's going to take you. And what you find with Ezekiel in this stage is he gets into the current. It's going to take him. Waist deep faith is when you let go and you say, okay, God, I'm in it now. Where are you going to lead me? I think right now the invitation in our world is for more and more Christians to get at least waist deep into our faith, to let God actually do with us what he would want us to do, not just what we've told him he's got to do. Again, it's not that the earlier stages don't matter. They certainly do. To get thrown into the deep end is really, anyone who, I'm always careful with brand new believers and what kinds of conversations we're having, because certain ones can rock you. But at some point, if you're avoiding conversations, well, that's not healthy either. One of my favorite thinkers, an Australian named missiologist named Alan Hirsch, he posted on social media this week, and I immediately grabbed a screenshot because I found these words convicting. He said this. He said, all factors point to signs that Christianity is in decline in the West. We must own the fact that the way we live out our faith is culpable, at least in some part. A domesticated, tamed version of Christianity that is mired in the same wants, desires, and traps of the watching world yields no appeal. Missional movements flourish because a group of people have been changed by Jesus, and the change is made abundantly clear through living in an alternative Jesus-like society of love, grace, and generosity. For most of us, this means we must simply begin to step out beyond our self-imposed barriers of safety and security and risk joining the Holy Spirit and what God is doing in our neighborhoods and our cities. He's right, isn't he? That's what our world wants. I actually think that's what we want. We gave it a go. 20 years, we've done the, like, let's see how where social media will take us. Let's see how that does for our psyche. Likes and follows, likes and follows. Since 1950, we played the game of let's play the Keeping Up with the Joneses game. Let's see where that takes the human soul. Let's play that game of, oh, you got a new riding lawnmower? I'll get a new riding lawnmower. Let's see where that goes. Let's see how that fulfills us. You're doing a kitchen renovation? I'll do a kitchen renovation. Now, nothing inherently wrong about that, but our souls are made for more than just getting excited over a kitchen renovation. If we go to the waist, and we truly let God take us where we want, the next stage is the most terrifying stage. I would call this next stage the stage of concession. Verse 5. He measured off another 1,000. Now it was a river that I could not cross. because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. He asked me, "Son of man, do you see this?" This is not the ending I would expect. After five football fields of comfort and five football fields of choices and five football fields of letting go of control, here's what I would expect. I would expect that this story would say, and I finally got into the deep water and God said, "Look, you can do it. Cross the river." I'm somebody who likes a goal, like put a goal in front of me and I will achieve the goal as best I can. I'll go after it. And it seems here that the goal for Ezekiel is to cross the river. And he tries to cross the river and he realizes, "I can't cross the river. No one can cross the river. It's like, wait a minute, this is the opposite of what I would expect would happen. What we've been taught, many of us, is work hard and the results will follow. Do the work, the results will follow. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, put in the time, do the work, the results will follow. This guy says, "Well, good luck with that. Good luck. Go ahead, try. You can't complete the journey on your own. You can't achieve the goal. You can't cross over onto the other side." And if you're like me, you want to ask, well, why not? Why, if that's the case, why do all this? Why do 12 miles of walking if you can't complete the mission? What's the point? I think that's the point. I think the point was, "Son of man, do you see this? Can't do it. Your nation has been trying to do this on their terms. Israel has been trying to do this on their terms without God. Now, they play the game. They're still offering the sacrifices. They're still going to worship services. Their feet are wet, sure. But they've been trying to do this on their terms. If you're going to see God do what God wants to do in your world, you're going to have to let him do it on his terms. Son of man, do you see this?" This is a stage I would call of conceding. Conceding for us often means like we lose. We often translate it as defeat. Like God is trying to pin us down and say, "You lose." But there's a better way to think of conceding. A better definition is to admit that something is true or valid after first denying or resisting it. To admit that something is true or valid after first denying or resisting it. Not many people do that these days. Essentially, this man says to Ezekiel, "You can stop trying to conquer the river. You've tried it. You can simply surrender to it. Let God do with you what he's going to do with you. For once, see how big your God is." Final observation, final question and an observation. Why do this? Why do this? It takes a lot of work. Why do all the work? 12 miles of walking in water. Walking in water is hard. Why do all this? It's way easier to stay ankle deep. In fact, it's probably a safe bet. You got this line from Paul saying, "Whoever says in their heart, Jesus is Lord, and confesses it with their mouth will be saved." Okay, so if the goal is just, "I'm just doing this to go to heaven when I die," okay, good. You're probably good. You can stay in the shallow, probably. I don't know. I'm not the judge, but you probably can stay in the shallow. So why do the work? If the goal is just to go somewhere else when you die, like why do the work? Catch this observation. The man asked a question, "Son of man, do you see this?" And then we read, "Then he led me back to the bank of the river. When I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river." Do you catch that? Do you see it? From the middle of the river, the man asked him, "Do you see it?" Apparently, he doesn't. He has to be led to the bank of the river. And now when he's led to the bank of the river, he sees that there's life growing all over because of the river. I wonder how many of us, we find ourselves in the midst of a river. God is trying to show us something about who he is. And we're in the midst of a river. And for us, we're just trying to survive. But all around us, if we were just to pull back, sit on the bank for just a moment, there's life happening all around us. Some of the people that have been most inspiring to me, inspired me in the season where I don't know that they saw that they were inspiring me. Like, I don't know that some of the people that have been most inspirational in my life, I think for many of them, they were just trying to survive. And for them, their survival instinct was to trust God and to lean on God and to pray more fiercely. And me standing on the bank sees, like, that's producing faith that I didn't know was possible. I wonder if you right now, if you're feeling like, "Man, I'm in this river And I feel like life is just one wave after the next, and the current is pulling me down. I wonder if one of the most helpful exercises you could do is to step out of the river for a moment. Maybe you don't have that luxury. Maybe you simply pull the people who are on the banks and you say, do you see anything in my faith in this? Your friends, your family? I bet you that your life is producing something in them. Faith, hope, love. Notice what happens next. He said to me, this water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, that's the Jordan River Valley, where it enters the Dead Sea. When it empties into the sea, the salty water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be large numbers of fish because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will. Where the river flows, everything will. It turns out that this river, unlike most rivers, the further you go in, the deeper the river gets. The deeper the river gets, the wider the river gets. The wider the river gets, the more it touches. The more it touches, lives. Because whatever this river touches, lives. This river, it turns out, starts as a trickle at its source, but the further you get in, the more it touches, and the more it touches, the more lives, even the Dead Sea. Now, this is the Dead Sea. Quite stunning, right? Beautiful. Absolutely stunning. But locals refer to it as the poisonous sea because nothing can survive it. It's the lowest point on earth. Jordan River is fresh water, but it empties into the Dead Sea. And there's no way to get out. So after centuries of emptying into the Dead Sea and evaporation, the Dead Sea is about 30% salt. The ocean is about 3% salt. You can sit on the Dead Sea and read the newspaper. It's actually quite terrifying when you're there because you go in the water, and if you kick back, like you'll just literally just, you can't, it's hard to get your feet again. I think I got a picture of someone reading on the Dead Sea. You can just sit and read a book in the middle of the sea. Nothing survives in the Dead Sea. What is the vision Ezekiel's given? From the temple, through the desert, to the most dead place, life. It goes on. Fishermen will stand along the shore from Engedi to En-Eglaim. In a couple weeks, we'll look at those. There'll be places for spreading fish, for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the Mediterranean Sea, but the swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They'll be left for salt. Don't ask me why. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor their fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing. Why leave the shallow? If you're just going to go to heaven when you die, like it said the right words, why leave the shallow? Because in a world that is many ways hopeless, we get to bring life. If this river can make even the Dead Sea live, then what does it look like for Christians to take this seriously? You can be shallow. You can choose that path and do the cultural Christian thing where it's like, I'm a Christian, you're a Christian, and you can play that game until Christianity is no longer good news for your, and then you can jump on whatever bandwagon is next. That's an option. You can decide to go knee deep and make choice after choice and go back and forth and spend your life kind of going back and forth, and now I'm excited for Jesus, and now I'm bored, and now I'm excited for Jesus. You can choose to go waist deep and just about ready to let go, but not quite. Or you can go all the way in. If you've never said yes to Jesus, I want to invite you into baptism on August 15th. We're going to Lake Michigan. We'd love to baptize you. Or if this last season this has just been a hard season and you want to recommit, make a profession of faith, we'd love to walk you through that. You can trust Him. You can trust Him. You can trust Him. You can trust Him with your finances. You can trust Him with your relationships. You can trust Him with your sexuality. You can trust Him with your loneliness. You can trust Him with your heartbreak. You can trust Him. For those of you, join me after the service. I'd love to chat with you about that. But for the rest of us, those of you who right now feel spiritually homeless, like I have felt, the temptation right now is to go back into the shallow. Let me plead with you don't do it. Don't do it. This is a season. The invitation is to go deeper. Go deeper. Whatever the river touches lives. Whatever the river touches lives. Don't go back. Don't settle for knee-deep, ankle-deep water. Would you join me in a word of prayer? Lord, we thank you for this ancient vision, this picture given to a world who is hopeless about the work you're going to do in the world. And Lord, we recognize that we get to participate. We get to play. And Lord, for those of us who right now look out at our world and we see signs of hope, but not a ton of it. Lord, we pray that right now you would remind us of the work you are doing in the world. Lord, I pray that the students this week would live such bold and courageous lives that, Lord, they would inspire us. Lord, would they launch the movement? Would you launch it on their shoulders, Jesus? But Lord, would we be part of it? Would you allow us to be the kind of people with depth and substance who are willing to go into the deep? Jesus, we love you. And we thank you that you meet us wherever we are. And we pray this, Lord, in your name. And everybody said,
as always, we're grateful that you would spend a little time with us. For more information about South Harbor Church, joining our community, or any of the things you hear on the podcast, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m., you'll find our service streamed live on both our Facebook page and on our Vimeo channel, which you can find by visiting vimeo.com/South Harbor Church. And so once again, from all of us here at South Harbor and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.